The first reading this morning comes from Don't Think of an Elephant by Berkeley, California author George Lakoff. This was written in 2004.
The strict father model begins with a set of assumptions. The world is a dangerous place, and it always will be, because there is evil out there in the world. The world is also difficult because it is competitive. There will always be winners and losers. There is an absolute right and an absolute wrong. Children are born bad in the sense that they just want to do what feels good, not what is right. Therefore, they have to be made good.
The second reading comes from the book Blessing the World, What Can Save Us Now, written by Rebecca Parker and edited by Rob Hardies in 2006. Rebecca Parker is the president of our seminary, Thomas Starr King School for the Ministry in Berkeley, California, which is the alma mater of both Eric and myself.
When I was a small child, I came home from vacation Bible school one June singing, "Jesus loves me, this I know, for the Bible tells me so. Little ones to him belong, they are weak, and he is strong." My mother stopped my singing. I got the distinct impression she would prefer that I never sing that song again. When I became an adult, I asked my mother, who, after all, the daughter and wife of a Methodist minister, what her objection was. She said, "I didn't think children should be taught to believe something just because the Bible says it's so. They should form their own religious thoughts from their experiences. Children shouldn't be told that they are weak. They need to discover their capacities and strengths."
And the last reading is in two parts, and both can be actually found written already in the backs of your order of celebration this week and every week. The first set of words are a composite set of words written by several members of the congregation, including the ministers and the religious education directors over the last 10 years. The second part is our own mission statement created by ourselves over an entire year with many voices combined into one statement of mission and purpose. Ours is a covenantal, not creedal tradition, open to everyone of goodwill, regardless of age or ability, gender, ethnicity, color, sexual or affectional orientation, or class. We agree to be together, not believe together. Together we mutually recreate this beloved community as we work to practice our stated mission in our lives, in our community, and in our world. Namely, we are here to learn and practice true hospitality, to revere the reasoning mind and the generous heart, to claim our diversity as a source of our strength, and to relinquish the safety of our unexamined privilege for the freedom to engage in transforming justice. This is Kelly Flood. Kelly Flood is someone I've known for a very, very long time, who I love very much, and to whom I am liturgically connected more than to anyone, meaning that I performed the marriage of her and her husband. I did the naming ceremony for their son, Evan. I preached at her ordination down in Lexington, Kentucky. And someday, when I die, she will do my eulogy. So she's someone whom I adore. She'll introduce herself a little bit more, but I really wanted you to know how important she is to me and how much I love her. And I give you Kelly.
It's good to be here. I do want to tell you about myself for the context of what I'm going to say purely. I'm a former community activist, a Unitarian Universalist parish minister in Lexington, Kentucky for 8 years, where I served from 1990 until 1998. I am currently the Vice President for Advancement, which is a fancy way of saying the lead fundraiser for Star King School for the Ministry, where I also graduated in 1990. And I'm currently a Democratic state representative in Kentucky, along with my day job for the school. And I have served with the school for a dozen years, and I want to just acknowledge the school's support as I also serve as a state representative. It's them thinking outside the box and honoring the multitude of ministries that's possible in one's lives. I was raised Catholic in a military family, and I became a Unitarian Universalist in my mid-20s, looking for a faith to affirm my feminist sensibilities and where women's leadership was encouraged, and also for a faith tradition that would honor what was then becoming a multi-faith family when I chose to propose, and he eventually accepted, my invitation to marry Neil, my Jewish husband, who is a man who fully embraced Unitarian Universalism as well, especially when we had the good fortune of a minister like Mark Bellatini, which is when we first met Mark. Now, who would want to be a politician in these days when it's deemed demonic at best? I'll get to that in a moment, but I will tell you that it has been an interesting course to have a profession that began as a minister, then into fundraising, and now as a politician. I can tell you that my experience, let's say if I was at a bar having a drink, when I was a minister, I would let somebody know I was a minister, and they'd say, let me go get a drink. They'd come back with a shot of skull, well, actually, 4 fingers worth of scotch, and tell me their life story. And then when I became a fundraiser, when I said to folk if I were having a drink in a bar that I was a fundraiser, they'd say, let me go get a drink, and I'd never see them again. And now as a politician, they come back with a drink for me and say, here, here's a drink, and now you owe me. Each of these threads in my professional life has stayed rooted in an understanding of public service that is connected profoundly to liberal religious values. And that is a strong sense of stewardship, where generosity and strategic choices are linked in order to shape a community that's more connected and one in which each of us and all of us have meaning and purpose in our lives. So that's stewardship linked to generosity and strategic choices so that each and every one of us and collectively can create greater meaning and purpose in our lives. And I am here to advocate this morning for that stewardship, for that larger good, for perseverance and determination in bringing it forth. I want us to hold it up, to honor that stewardship, and to own it. And I would tell you that I believe that our very way of life depends upon it. As you ask one another in the days ahead, in your canvas process, to commit your hard-earned dollars, to fairly pay your ministers, fully fund your healing transformative programs that I have seen and heard about over the years, to carefully tend one of the more beautiful buildings in our denomination and our association of churches and fellowships, and to meet your fair share of commitments to the larger Unitarian Universalist world and to the Columbus area in which you live, how you understand this conversation of commitments matters. the way that you frame it impacts the goals you have, the plans you will set to carry out those goals, and how you will engage one another in holding yourselves accountable to success in those goals. Framing is what we understand as common sense. And I want to stay very close today to what it means to frame the way we see the world. So let me begin first by asking if you would be so kind as to raise your hand if you choose. How many of you have been members of this congregation or come regularly enough to think of yourself as potentially joining since the year 2000? To raise your hands. Since 2000. Thank you so much. It's about half of you. And how about since 2005? And that's a solid third of you. This is a flight attendant alert. I fly a lot. You know how you get on the plane and she says, you're heading to Lexington. Are you aware of that? Let me make sure everybody here understands that you are in a congregation that is rooted in liberal religious values. That's where humanists and heretics across the ages have rejected the image of God or what we deem holy and call love. As a father, and a particularly cruel father who demanded the suffering his only son on the cross, you were linked to universalists like Hosea Ballou, who in his treatise on atonement denounced that God, or the great Jehovah, as he called him, would call for the endless misery of humankind just to appease his anger. Ballou understood that how people imagine God or love or that which is most holy in our lives influences the social structures we create and how we behave with one another and with ourselves privately. The modern-day political scientist and linguist George Lakoff understands this too. And in a recent article in the New York Times, he writes that the central issue in our political life is not being discussed openly. At stake is the moral basis of American democracy. The moral basis of American democracy. And that central issue, he believes, is how conservatives and liberals name or frame their worldview. And wherever you find yourselves in the political spectrum, and I understand that in our midst there is always a continuum, we are in the habit of framing our national discourses with an understanding of family. We speak about it in our congregations and in our communities and as a nation. When we want to frame up the picture of how we understand the way we organize ourselves, we begin with the frame of family. And why does this matter? It matters because of the radical differences with which religious conservatives and religious liberals, we here today, understand what a healthy, productive, prosperous family looks and acts like, especially how we raise our children and what we tolerate in our children. So let me explain. Conservatives believe in the strict father model of family, where the father is the decider, the ultimate moral authority in the family. And if you'll remember, I told you I was raised in the military. So I need for you to understand that what I'm about to share with you, each of us has components of these value systems within us, depending on our life experience. All right? So I came out of a military background, and I relate heavily to this understanding of the world in certain moments and places. Okay. I just want to make that point. This is not an either or. Often it's both and. So the conservatives believe in the strict father model, where the father is the decider, the ultimate moral authority in the family. And his authority must not be challenged. That's a critically important understanding. His job is to protect the family, to support the family by winning competitions in the marketplace, and to teach kids right from wrong, especially by disciplining them if they do wrong. And physical discipline is necessary and required. Only then will children develop the internal discipline to become moral beings. And only such discipline, with that discipline, will they prosper, because that moral discipline will enable them to prosper. And what does that mean of people who are not prosperous? They don't have discipline. And without discipline, they cannot be moral. So they deserve their poverty. Critically important to understand that. They deserve their poverty. The good people are hence the prosperous people. Helping others takes away their discipline. Helping others undermines their discipline and hence makes them both unable to prosper on their own and function morally in the world. Let me give you an example of this. In Kentucky, there is a bill that's just come before the state legislature by Representative Lonnie Napier, a Republican, who filed a bill that I will tell you was co-filed with the Speaker of the House, a Democrat, my Speaker, the one I voted for and helped put into power. He filed this bill along with Representative Napier that mandated people on food stamps be tested for drugs before they received those food stamps. Now, I will tell you that I was at a dinner party with very progressive-minded friends of mine who liked this idea, too. Now, why would this be? This notion that helping people who are frauding the government and good taxpaying people's money is going to people who are committing fraud is a crime. Now, we can all agree on that statement. But I did point out when this was being debated last week on the floor, that if we're concerned with the impact of fraud and dollars spent on fraud, then we need to make sure that we are drug testing the CEOs and board chairs of the corporations, especially banks, that are receiving millions of tax credits annually in our state government. And I will tell you, yeah, if we're going to drug test, then each state representative in this body, I pointed out, needed to be tested as well. Because our job was to oversee fraud, waste, and abuse. And if we were letting that go on the dimes we were getting for being state reps, then we were a part of the problem as well. So our ability to decide who's a winner and who's a loser in our system allows some to file a bill like this and not think critically about how the winners and the losers are connected. But in Representative Napier's worldview, and this is important in work I've done on the floor of the House, I was wrong. And the reason I was wrong is because the marketplace where the winners and losers are engaged is seen as both natural and moral. The marketplace itself is seen as natural and fundamentally moral because it is how each human being pursues self-interest. And in the worldview of the strict conservative viewpoint, self-interest is a right, and in fact a noble right. George Lakoff makes the point that as the ultimate moral authority, there should be no power higher than the market, and none might go against market values. Thus, the government can spend money to protect the market and promote market values, but should not rule over it, either through regulation, the attack on the EPA that's going on with Senator McConnell filing bills at the national level so that Kentucky doesn't have to follow EPA's rules in protecting our water and our mountain streams. Taxation, Not a good thing. Unions and workers' rights interfere with the market's ability to thrive. Environmental protection or food safety laws over regulation. And tort cases, most assuredly tort cases, just a way for lawyers to make money. Now, the government also, and this is critically important, I think sometimes we really lose sight of this fact, that the government should not be in the business of service industries. That is something the market can handle. It is wrong for the government to provide health care, education, public broadcasting, public parks, and so on. No one should be paying for anyone else. It's an individual's responsibility in all arenas. Now, Lakoff claims in the end that freedom is defined as being your own strict father, with individual, not social, responsibility, and without any government interference or authority telling what you can and cannot do. And to defend that freedom, by the way, you definitely need a gun. Now, let me state that that's a bit dramatic, but I would suggest to you, if you asked yourself, is it overly dramatic? Probably not, because we do see these values alive in our world right now. They're alive and well. So let's get to the liberal religious set of values. And they're found at the heart of the reading by Rebecca Parker, who's speaking about her own experience growing up. Liberal religious values see our nation's government fundamentally as a nurturing parent. The model, instead of strict father, this now, in liberal religious values, we understand the nurturing parent model, where we raise our children not to be obedient, though God knows sometimes we would really appreciate that, but to think for themselves, that we place a higher value on a child who, when we tell them to go clean up their room, sasses back, if I clean my room now, I'm just going to mess it up later, and then what? So I'm going to go read a book instead. We're kind of proud of that kid. All right? So to think for oneself in order to become responsible, not just to think for oneself, but to become responsible to oneself, to know one's mind, and ultimately to turn that responsibility to one's community. The nurturing parent worldview assumes the world, despite its dangers and difficulties, is basically good. That it can be made better, and that it's everyone's responsibility to work for the betterment of our world. We are all responsible for that. Thus, both parents are essential to raising children. It's not a father or mother focus. And children who know empathy, caring for the feelings of others, and responsibility for oneself and others, are children who are being raised properly. Remember the brouhaha when President Obama named empathy as an essential quality for a Supreme Court justice, and you would have thought he had said, according to the conservative pundits, that a murderous mindset was what was essential? Empathy was truly a threat to a worldview. I think we have to notice that as liberal religious people. That understanding how another person feels and making that matter to you is a threat to democracy. Liberal religious people are the ones who deem that the holy in life is ultimately grounded in love. And that love means that you and I are fundamentally connected, not separate from one another. We value covenants over contracts. We believe that responsibility to one another is more important than self-reliance. Again, these are all shades of gray. We hold them. The fact that I'm even saying that shows that I'm a liberal religious person, the ambivalence piece. We deem the market as a means to an end, and that end is building better communities, greater justice, especially for the most vulnerable, people who cannot speak up or take care of themselves. And we know that there are people who are born with needs where the other is critical. We know that's true. The role of government to liberal religious people is to provide an infrastructure of services, fundamentally different, to support empathy, responsibility, fairness, freedom, trust, and transparency. From these values, specific policies follow. Social safety nets are where we should be putting our money. Government regulations to stem humanity's tendency toward greed. Universal education for all. Protection of civil liberties and access to our court systems, thus well-paid attorneys for all. And the promotion of an economy that spreads profits and benefits throughout the workforce, ensuring that all are enjoying equal access to the pursuit of happiness. I just saw the time, my dear friend. I'll get to the core of it. And taxes, they are the dues we pay to live in our civilized society. They're dues. Just like your canvas coming up, it's the dues you pay to make sure that all of this is possible. And now I'm going to leave the script and cut to the heart in honor of time and say this. We liberal religious people have to take ourselves more seriously. Our country's future depends on us insisting that our values be of worth in this society. It can't be enough for you to show up here and be worried about your peace of mind, while surely that matters. You have to care about the future of our country's values, knowing that government is good. And you got to get out there and be in the streets like they are in Wisconsin about it, in the ways that you choose to do it. There are so many ways to be active. But I will tell you that our days of quietly nurturing are not going to cut it if we're going to make it a place where our children's freedom of mind and ability to know that my schizophrenic brother has a home that is caring for him, and that each of us, as we age, has a pension that means we don't have to work until we're 85, and that teachers are not vilified as the next, I don't even know what we are supposed to now think of teachers. I will tell you this, there is work to be done, and this church is at the center of that work, and we as religious liberals need to invest more generously than you thought possible in the people and the programs that are going to bring that message out into our world that needs us, that needs us. May it be so. Amen.